Next case is 06-1406, in reapplication of Reza Yazdian. Ms. Anelli.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Diana Anelli, and I represent the respondent in these proceedings. The respondent is Reza Yazdian, and he is over here to my left. And these are character and fitness proceedings. Now, character and fitness to sit for the bar. That is a very important determination, whether one has the character and fitness to sit for the bar of the state of Ohio. The burden, of course, is on the applicant, so it would be, in this case, on Mr. Yazdian. Interestingly enough, you know, prior to his application to sit for the Ohio bar, Mr. Yazdian had a sterling character. His life was filled with all kinds of accomplishments. If you look at the record, he was chair of the Interfraternity Council while in undergraduate school. He led the IFC to participate in many philanthropic endeavors, such as raising money for the March of Dimes. He sat on the board of One Way Farm, an interdenominational home for abandoned, abused, and troubled children, eventually becoming its vice president and giving it very sound financial advice, I might add. His accomplishments continued after college into the workforce. He has numerous commendation letters during his employment, both with Airborne Express and MITAC, which is a division of Johnson & Johnson. Again, during law school, he continued on with many, many accomplishments. He received the Distinguished Student Award. This is an award that is given usually only to one person in Mr. Yazdian's class, though it was given to two individuals, and it is based on a variety of factors, one of them being ethical conduct. He participated in moot court. He went to the national moot court competition, participated in mock trial, participated in the 60-plus elderly law clinic. He was elected by the student body at Cooley Law School as a permanent member of the alumni board of directors. His accolades continued even into the character and fitness process. His application is replete with letters of recommendation from physicians, lawyers, and others as to the quality of his character and fitness. His law school dean came down twice during three board hearings that occurred in this matter to testify on his behalf. I don't know that my law school dean would even know who I am, let alone be able to testify as to my character and fitness, but Mr. Yazdian's law school dean came outside of state to Ohio to testify in his behalf.
Was the law school dean asked at the hearing to give his opinion about the conduct that has caused Mr. Yazdian to be here, whether his opinion would change or not?
I'm not exactly sure I understand the question. Which conduct are you referring to, Your Honor?
Well, the conduct that he alleges Ms. Allen is all the sorts of, you know what the record is, all the sorts of things that he alleges Ms. Allen said about him and did to him, and I mean, that's why we're here, I think.
Okay. I don't think that there is any question that the reason that we are here is because of the writing of an April 27th, 2004 letter that Mr. Yazdian's attorney wrote and submitted to the Bar Association.
Mr. Yazdian, I understand, saw before it was sent.
Right, Your Honor, there's no question, he did see it.
Okay.
And he reviewed it and he read it over. And I'm not exactly sure, you know, you have to understand something. A couple of things in this matter. There is no question that something really bad happened at that interview process. Something went amok. Not only did Ms. Allen feel like she was in a very tense situation, but Mr. Yazdian felt that way too. They both were at odds with one another. Mr. Britt, less so. But he was willing to say, you know, the two of those, and I'm paraphrasing here, when you get the two of those together, it's like oil and water. And Mr. Yazdian's conduct is described as hostile, volatile, defiant, defensive. Probably some of those descriptions, the defensiveness, probably has some kind of validity to it. But, you know, I asked his representatives that came in and testified for him, is he volatile? And 201, they said no. But understand this about about Reza. You know, he's a very strong personality. When he has an opinion about something, usually he has the facts to back it up, and usually he's not going to stray from that opinion. He's going to stick up for what he believes, and he's going to do it in a very animated type of manner. Some of us who appear before courts a lot of times, and Mr. Yazdian, of course, is going to, he wants to become a trial attorney, we're like that, you know? Many people have the, when they speak before people, they become very animated. All of the people that appeared on his behalf said, look it, I can understand how one would get the impression that he is being hostile, even though that's not really the case. But it would be difficult to be able to determine that in a mere 30-minute conversation. Instead, you have to get to know him a little bit. You might be a little bit disarmed. Even Miss Allen said, you know, look, this is a 30-minute interview, okay? And so she put down her impressions on an interviewer report as to what occurred in the interview. And the consequence was that she described him in negative terms, though she testified she believed that it was a positive report, because eventually she said, yes, let's pass him for character and fitness, but she put the word barely in there. And so that was the reason and the way that he felt, and some other things that occurred with regard to the interviewer report, that the letter was written. Now, there's no question. Was the letter a good idea? Of course it wasn't a good idea. Was the letter ill-timed? Of course it was ill-timed. Is he sorry for the letter? Yes. He has said repeatedly since the second hearing and on into the third hearing, I wish to God I would have handled this differently. I wish I could turn back the clock, but you can't. You can't go back and undo that which was already done. Now, having said that, does that mean that the entire content of the letter is false? No, and understand something else. You know, it's true that the letter says very caustic things, and one of the caustic things that it implies is that perhaps there is racial animus. Was there racial animus? We don't know. We are never, ever going to know the answer to that question. And I can tell you that's not unusual. When you know, you're the Supreme Court of Ohio. Certainly you have had discrimination cases come before you. And of course, you're at the tail end of the discrimination case, but I will tell you, when they start, you have very, very little evidence to back up a claim of discrimination. And the threshold that you have to reach actually is very, very low. All you have to show is a prima facie case. And then it's up to somebody else to say, wait a minute, no, there was a legitimate reason for me doing this.
The prima facie case, the fact that she asked him questions that offended him, I guess, for lack of a better term. I mean, he didn't like the way she asked questions, once on the phone, I guess, and then an interview, but.
Well, Your Honor.
The basis for the racial discrimination charge, that's a serious charge.
Right, I understand.
Volunteer and admission process is pretty serious charge.
Right. I understand the seriousness of the charge. I have two things to say about that. Mr. Yazdian testified as to the basis for why he himself thought that there was animus there. And one of them was their miscommunication. And both of them agree that there was miscommunication during that interview process. Both of them agreed that there was tenseness and apparently hostility and that kind of thing. But also, you know, when an interviewer puts down negative comments about somebody, they have a duty, according to that very document, to explain why and to explain what the response of the applicant was, and she didn't do that. And then, when she put, yes, barely, that he passed character and fitness, to not explain that, he felt also was indicative. Now, were these right? You know, probably not. But understand this, the letter was not written by him. You know, I argued this at the board hearing. This is a man who just graduated from law school. He can't possibly be expected to understand the finer points of Title VII law, or 4112 for that matter.
But
he can't know that, as
you pointed out, he was not a babe in the woods. He had a lot of experience with interpersonal relationships and all of his stellar work he did. And I mean, we see people go through this system every, you know, thousands of young people who have far less experience than he does, who get through it with tough questions without this kind of record.
Well, when you say this kind of record, Your Honor, it is true that the report and recommendation say some very, very negative things, and it is true that Ms. Allen's comments say some very, very negative things, but the record is always also replete with very, very good things about this applicant. You know, he didn't agree. It seems to me that the major problem here, and by the way, before I forget, if I could just reserve 2 minutes on rebuttal.
Watch your time. I mean, you probably didn't start looking at the clock, but...
Okay, thank you very much. I didn't even realize it was there.
Almost 5 minutes remaining.
Okay. Where was I going with this? I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. You were asking about, there are a lot of people that have been through this. It's true. He is more experienced than the normal individual in life experiences. However, that doesn't mean that he understands. You know, he followed the correct process. When he thought something was wrong, he went and he spoke with a Cincinnati attorney. He went to his law school dean. He spoke with his law school dean. Both of them said, hire counsel. He hired counsel. That's what he did. That is the process. I don't understand how he can be faulted for that. Counsel was supposed to be a competent practitioner. I don't know Mr. Chatfield.
But it's hard to understand why he even did that, because he had been passed. He had been passed to take the bar, and he took the bar. And where the character and judgment issue comes in, if he becomes an attorney, does he want to advise a client who has, quote, won what he wanted, to go and create all this dissension that now brings further attention and brings other things to light, like some comments he made in subsequent interviews that are now suspect?
Comments he made in subsequent...
Such as working with the attorney when he was simply in the office and not really working with the attorney. Exaggerations that continue to trouble people.
Okay. Your Honor, let me just comment about the exaggerations, one of which was that he worked alongside interviewer Kent Britt. If you look at Mr. Britt's comment on that, he says, working alongside, well, I wouldn't exactly say that that's accurate, but I wouldn't exactly say that that's inaccurate either. The truth of the matter is, he was hired by a temporary agency. He went in. Mr. Britt was in charge of that entire case. He was in charge of the discovery. Now, he didn't do a lot of the hands-on stuff, but he was in there. He was working literally alongside Mr. Yazdian, and they did have conversations. Did they talk substantively about the case? You know, perhaps not. Does that mean that it's an exaggeration to say that he worked alongside of him? No, they were in the same room. They were working on the same case. Mr. Britt was his superior. You know, I have to disagree with that. Another one of the misrepresentations that the board seems to think occurred was with regard to his financial status and the fact that it cost him $40,000 to get through, he says, the first hearing. Those are all documented. If you look in exhibits 36, 37, and 38, you will find documentation for every single dime of that $40,000. If you look in exhibit number 39, you will find a table that Mr. Yazdian made describing exactly how he got there. And if you look at the testimony, the testimony is replete with exactly how he got there. Now, the board didn't accept some of those. But because the board did not accept some of his expenses as something that should be attributable to this $40,000 figure, doesn't mean that he misrepresented or he somehow lied about it. What it means is that they just rejected it. Kind of like you would in a personal injury matter. If you're in a personal injury matter, you put up your damages. Whatever your damages are. The judge makes a determination as to whether it's going to be admissible or whether it's not. But if it's not admissible, the judge doesn't later come and say, you lied. You know, that is not what happened here. It distresses me that the board would use such negative terms to describe Mr. Yazdian. And it especially distresses me that it would use such terms about his presentation before the board, because as we submitted in significant affidavits, with the objections, Mr. Yazdian was very, very polite. He was very, very courteous to the members of the board, but he didn't agree with them. He simply told them, look, with all due respect, and pretty much this is how he said it, with all due respect, I just disagree. At one point, Mr. Ramey asked him, don't you think that your accusation of Ms. Allen being the cause of the sua sponte review, don't you think that you're just wrong about that? And he said, with all due respect, Your Honor, no, I don't. And these are the reasons why I don't think so. And quite frankly, it's really hard to disagree. If I were on that committee and I saw an application from an interview, if I saw an interviewer report come through describing an applicant as hostile, as volatile, as all of those things that are sitting there and barely meets character and fitness, you better believe my vote is going to be, hey, look, we got to do a sua sponte review. Whatever happened in that interview, I want that man before me, and I want to see what kind of impression he is going to make. Your Honor, I apologize. Does this mean I have 16 seconds left?
It means your time has expired.
Okay. Then let me just say that, and I hope that you will give me just 30 seconds then at the end of this after my opposing counsel speaks, but let me just say that we hope that you do not accept the board's conclusion on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Anelli. Mr. Gottman.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Andrew Gottman. I'm here on behalf of the Dayton Bar Association to urge you to adopt the findings of the board regarding Mr. Yazdian, deny his application, but find that he can reapply to take the next bar examination.
I wanted to ask that. The board recommendation is that he should not reapply until February 2007. Literally taken, that would mean that he could not file an application to take a bar exam until February 2007, which would be the July exam. I take it you must agree that this rather inartful statement in the recommendation means reapply to take the February 2007 bar exam.
That was how I read it, Your
okay.
Honor. Provided that he goes through the character and fitness process again, we believe that Mr. Yazdian's conduct after he was denied, or after the board requested sua sponte review in July of 2003, demonstrated a lack of respect for the application process to apply for the bar, demonstrated a lack of judgment, and then the board also found that his actions when appearing before them lacked a degree of candor and honesty that were necessary to practice law. How did he lack respect for the application process? The primary example of that is the April 2004 letter, which he approved, and the accusations in it from his testimony before the board came from him. He accuses Ms. Allen, who is a volunteer, the Cincinnati Bar Association, of initiating the board's sua sponte review, of doing so with a discriminatory intent, of having a conflict of interest, of violating this court's rules, and of misconduct in her opening statement before the board that occurred in October of 2003, the sua sponte hearing that the board required. As it turns out, and we've had three hearings on this case, there's no evidence to support any of those accusations. There's suppositions, certainly, because Ms. Allen asked him some questions about flaws in his application and had some negative comments to make about those flaws, that perhaps that was motivated by racial animus. But beyond supposition, there's no evidence. There's supposition, again, that perhaps because Ms. Allen wrote negative things, the board issued a sua sponte review. Again, there's no evidence of that. And what shows, we believe in this case, poor judgment is that Mr. Yazdian makes those accusations in April of 2004. He has two hearings. He gets to hear from Ms. Allen. Ms. Allen is also deposed. There's no evidence that comes out to support any of his accusations, yet he continues to maintain those accusations, continues to maintain those beliefs all the way up through his last hearing in front of the board. To maintain this type of animus toward Ms. Allen, to blame her for missing the July 2003 bar examination, and remember, he was allowed to take the February 2004 bar examination, so this was after he had already been allowed to take one bar examination, and to maintain that animus for a whole nother year and a half, we believe shows extremely poor judgment, and it shows that he is someone who may, as a practicing attorney, if he receives a decision that he disagrees with from a court, gets in an argument with opposing counsel, may make similar accusations that, as the court has already pointed out, might bog down other proceedings in a similar way. So the combination of the lack of respect that his letter shows, the lack of judgment that his letter shows, and that is evidenced by his continued ability to hold on to those beliefs despite the lack of any evidence to support them, along with what the board found to be a lack of candor, what the board said was a belief that verbosity would substitute for honesty in his appearances before them, we would ask that you adopt the finding of the board. And I just want to clarify one additional thing. Counsel for the applicant, in her brief and in her argument, makes a great deal out of the fact that perhaps Mr. Yazdian's, what the board found to be his exaggerations, can be explained. Whether he was working alongside Mr. Britt, whether he in fact lost $40,000 as part of that first hearing. As I read the board's decision, the question isn't whether there's some potential explanation out there for them. It's whether those statements are part, because they were included in that April 2004 letter, whether those statements were part of a process of trying to make Mr. Yazdian look as good as possible, and whether he was willing to exaggerate, push things right up to the envelope, and obviously in some cases beyond that. And so they're not, you know, misrepresentations in the sense that this court has barred other applicants from taking the bar examination based on misrepresentations on their application. They're simply additional evidence of a lack of good judgment.
Counsel, do we have any obligation or duty as a court to weigh these instances that happened in a fairly narrow frame of time to his very stellar record and all of the character references and all the contributions that he made? I mean, when you look at all of that, you certainly think that he has character and fitness, and then there are some things which clearly are bad judgment. I don't think anybody can dispute that, but maybe there's a lesson he's learned that he knows not to repeat if he gets into the practice of law. Can we weigh that against the balance, or do we look at that in isolation?
You absolutely should weigh all of that, because no one should be judged just on one single act. And I think that the way to do that is to allow Mr. Yazdian to reapply and to go through the character and fitness process again and establish with his interviewers and then with the board, if necessary, establish that he has learned from this process, that he won't do it again.
Counsel, presumably we'd have three different interviewers?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
The Cincinnati Bar Examination has already recused themselves from the process, which is why the Dayton Bar Association is before you. The Dayton Bar Association could do it, or you could get another bar association even to handle those interviews. But it certainly wouldn't be the same interviewers.
Let me ask you, the board report doesn't couple of gaps in. He took the July 2004 exam, and is it your contention that after he got the results of that exam, he could reapply for to take the exam again, which is very common? And I think that could happen. Could that have happened in his case without another review by the Board of Commissioners and by the on character and fitness, or was there, what caused the board to again review his character and fitness after the bar exam that he took?
My understanding, Your Honor, is that the board for a reapplication has to reevaluate the applicant's character and fitness again in light of any additional things that have happened.
That's a much quicker or briefer kind of, because as you say, it's anything that's happened since the last time they reviewed the candidate.
That's right, Your Honor. And in this case, he wasn't even interviewed by the Bar Association a second time. It simply moved straight up to the Board of Examiners, or the Board of...
Character and Fitness.
Exactly.
Board. And that's then where this continued on, or his, where
that's right.
The fact that Ms. Allen had approved him the first time, he was able to take the bar, because as I understand the board, the first time decided, well, there is some friction here between the one examiner, and not Mr. Britt essentially confirms Ms. Allen's statements in all this. And so we have Ms. Allen and Mr. Yazdian, and the board said, we're gonna give Mr. Yazdian the benefit of the doubt, let him take the bar exam. He took it, he needs to take it again. And so it goes back then to the Character Fitness Board to review what has occurred in the ensuing months.
Yes, that's right, Your Honor. And in the interim is when Mr. Yazdian and his counsel sent the letter to
that's
the Cincinnati Bar.
That's what got the board interested the second time, I guess, or at least...
That's what I would guess, too, Your
caused
Honor.
...caused the recommendation to occur the second time.
When were all these witnesses called on behalf of Mr. Yazdian?
They were called... Mr. Yazdian has appeared before the board three times. Once after the board's sua sponte review, and then the board approved him, and that was in October of 2003. Then he took the bar in February 2004, and then there were hearings and did not pass the bar. And when he reapplied, there were hearings in 2004 and in 2005. And at all three hearings, Mr. Yazdian has had witnesses appear to testify about his character.
So are you saying that if we agree that there should be another character and fitness review, that this would be necessary again, the expense of more witnesses in front of the board?
I can't speak for the board, Your Honor, but if there's another character and fitness review, Mr. Yazdian is certainly entitled to present, and the board requests a hearing on that. Mr. Yazdian is entitled to present any witnesses that he wants to have appear before the board and testify on his character. I would assume without knowing that the board would also accept the transcripts from the prior hearings about his testimony. So I don't think there would be any need to repeat what's already happened.
I guess we can assume, maybe we shouldn't, but I guess we can assume that but for this letter to the board after the February 2004 exam, the Character and Fitness Board probably would have approved him, because they'd already reviewed him before and gave him the benefit of the doubt, so I guess we would assume that.
I think that's right, Your Honor, but I think the letter itself is what the board and
sure, yeah,
is I what mean, they've latched on to, and I think rightly so.
Understandably. Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Anelli, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Counsel, let me direct you to the last statement that the chief, the last observation here, that although your client, there was reservations expressed, he was able to take the bar. And then the next process to retake the bar would be the simplified examination, or not examination, but interview. And what actually triggered the scrutiny was not Ms. Allen or previous.
It was the letter.
It was the letter. So,
oh, yeah. There's no question. It was
you know,
the letter.
This allegation that but for Ms. Allen, you know, life would be fine doesn't exactly...
Your Honor, if I can just address that. The but-for Ms. Allen was with regard to the October 20th, 2003 sua sponte review only. The rest of them, everybody else acknowledges it's the letter. Instead of going on, if there are no more questions from me, my client actually would just like to take a couple of seconds to address you.
Well, I do have some questions.
Oh, all right.
The sua sponte review, which resulted in him taking the bar.
Which one are you talking about?
Because well, I don't know which one are you talking about.
There's been three of them. When, throughout the documentation, and I understand that there's a lot of documentation here, when the board says you are blaming Ms. Allen for the sua sponte review that we, the board, determined we were going to do of you, they're not talking about the November 11th, 2004 or the November 4th, 2005 board hearings. They are talking only about the October 20th, 2003 board hearing.
Which allowed him to take the bar.
Right.
So where's your beef with that hearing? Why is that a trigger point here? Why is that something that was that we're even talking about here?
Well, the board, as near as I can tell, the board was upset because when they questioned Reza at the hearing about why he thought that Ms. Allen's comments were the basis for the sua sponte review in October 2003, he said, you know, I don't believe that it is because you decided this yourself in a vacuum. I believe that it is because of the comments that she put.
Even all that being said, he was still allowed to take the bar exam.
Right.
And as the chief pointed out, he would have been in the normal flow of process to re-examine, to take the next exam, but for this letter.
Is your question, why did he write the letter?
I guess that's something that hasn't been answered.
Yeah, if your question is, why was the letter written? Initially, the letter was written, and Mr. Yazdian testified about this, because he was distressed about the process, and he wanted to Ms. Allen wanted to bring to the attention of somebody that she was distressed over what occurred.
This letter...
He was, too.
When did this letter from the attorney transpire in relationship to him taking the bar?
He took the bar in February 2004. The letter went out on April 27th, 2004.
Exactly. He didn't know the results of the bar exam.
No.
He knew he had taken the bar.
Right.
Well,
he had an interview that went sour, and he wanted to bring to somebody's attention that he thought he was mistreated in the interview process. That was the only intent. He wanted to say, look, if you're going to have an interview process here, let's see what we can do about making some improvements. And he explained upon questioning at the 2005 hearing what improvements he thought ought to occur with regard to this, including adding a third interviewer. By the way, there's only two interviewers that occur.
I know that.
And, perhaps having a court reporter there, perhaps having it audio taped or videotaped so that everybody is on the same page and it is clear what
happens.
But
the problem is he says that, in essence, that Ms. Allen had no reason to question him about his multiple traffic violations. His application was full of apparently grammar and sentence, sorts of things we like lawyers to be able to communicate effectively. And those were legitimate questions. And Mr. Britt said, I had the same questions. But he tries to say, those were Ms. Allen's prejudice against me. She asked those questions because she was biased against me. Well, that's not supported by Mr. Britt's testimony. He had the very same questions. And yet, Mr. Yazdian goes after Ms. Allen. You know, I want to say this because it just seems to me, I guess I'm wondering whether the discrimination issue here is he didn't like this woman asking her these questions. Is there any sense of that here?
Your Honor, I've wrestled with that issue myself, but the testimony doesn't exactly reflect that. Mr. Yazdian has testified over and over and over again, I didn't have a problem with her asking me these questions. I told her a zillion times, 16 traffic violations is not acceptable.
I thought that was one of the reasons he gave for feeling she was biased against him.
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
I read something that seemed to say that.
It could
maybe
be,
not.
Yeah. It could be that one of the arguments is that, but I don't recall that was the testimony.
Well, counsel, I might have missed it, but where's the prejudice? What's at play here to make allegations of discrimination?
Well, you know, if I had looked at all of these facts and
what's the race or gender or ethnicity? What are we talking about here?
Your Honor, I'm now put in a situation where I have to second guess Mr. Chatfield's thinking, and quite frankly, I can't. You know, I mean, I've handled discrimination cases. If a client had come to me with this factual scenario and said that this is race, I'd have said, come on, honey, we got to have a talk. No, it's not. You know, I don't agree with the conclusion in the letter, but I don't think that it is reflective of character and fitness when my client hires an attorney who is supposed to know about these things and he messes up.
But he does agree that he agrees in his testimony for the panel that he everything in the letter was substantively what he had reviewed before it was finalized, and the lawyer didn't get this out of clear air.
Well, what
he talked to his client, I assume.
I understand, Your Honor. What he testified was, I went to my lawyer. I told him my concerns, and my lawyer wrote the letter. And my statement to you would be, even in reviewing it, you know, it is the lawyer that is making that determination that there's racial animus going on here. He's not in a position in his legal career to be able to make that determination. That's why he hired a lawyer. You know, he's. I think it is not improper for him to rely on the advice of his counsel when his counsel is saying that this could be the reason.
I think
it foolish? Oh, yeah.
I think what's bothering us, and maybe perhaps Justice O'Connor from her questions, is that this looks like he was just really mad that she had even put that word next to yes, barely. And even though he got to take the bar exam, he failed it, and now he's just mad, and so he goes after her. After the fact, when if he just kept his
if
kept
he
it
just
cool,
kept his mouth shut,
right,
everything would have been
but
just.
But that's, you know, that's judgment. That goes to the judgment of somebody being a lawyer. This is really, I mean, this is more than just a little indiscretion. I mean, if this is the way he sees the world as a lawyer, that's what the board is concerned about.
Right, Your Honor, and I certainly can understand that. You know, all of the evidence that we put before the board on his character and fitness, and everybody pretty much agrees that this is pretty much an aberration. Was he angry? He probably was angry. I would be angry, too. It appears to me that Ms. Allen was angry enough to put very, very negative things about him, too. So they both were angry. You know, maybe she could have lightened up on what she said. Maybe he could have lightened up on what he said, and then maybe everybody isn't here.
Except Mr. Britt agrees with what Ms. Allen says, and there's no allegation against Mr. Britt for anything.
Right. Mr. Britt agrees that there was tension between the two of them.
Yeah, he does agree with that.
Right.
Let me ask you, we've kept you a long time, but what I understand, the next bar exam, of course, is February, and so he's cleared. I think what you are objecting to, number one, you like the fee that we charge somebody to take a fee every time they take the bar exam. We have the authority to waive the fee.
Right.
But I think what you want is that he not have to go through the character fitness review again, that he just be able to take the bar exam without the character fitness review. That's your request, I think.
Well, that would be part of the request, but understand, once this court makes a determination that he lacks character and fitness, that follows him forever. If he decides to go to another state, he has to reveal that. In this post-Enron era, if he becomes any kind of a corporate executive, that follows him. So we're much more concerned about the broader picture here, too.
Well, that would go to our decision whether we require him to have a character and fitness review again, I guess. I mean, it's not...
I think it would go to your determination as to whether you agree with the board that he lacks the character and fitness to sit. And we certainly understand that, you know, July 2006 is gone. You can't back up time and say, well, you should have been able to sit, so go sit.
Right.
You can't do that.
But the board says he has the character and fitness to sit, to apply to sit in February. So the board has said, you know, we have recommendations from this Board of Character Fitness that say don't ever reapply. We have others that say don't reapply for 2 years.
Right.
He's gotten a pretty, in that sense, want to call it lenient. Yeah, it's the next bar exam. And so I guess I understand what you're saying. You'd like us to say, we'd like us to disavow or not accept the recommendation of the board regarding its conclusion on character and fitness, but also to approve him their recommendation that he can take the February bar exam.
Exactly, Your Honor. Exactly. Can my client just have 30 seconds?
Unless one of the justices wants to ask and hear him, my inclination is we've spent, I think we understand the issues. I think we understand that your client did express remorse in one of the hearings. And so unless somebody wants to hear from him, we will thank you.
Thank you so much, Your Honors.
Thank you. Marshal, please adjourn court.